Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Skylines is brought to you by 100 Resilient Cities. Pioneered by the Rockefeller Foundation, 100 Resilient Cities is dedicated to helping cities around the world become more resilient to the physical, social, and economic challenges of the growing part of the 21st century. You can find out more at its website, 100resilientcities.org.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm John. And this week we're talking about mayors.
Mayors. John, you've been doing some interesting research about mayors.
I love a mayor, me. I'm big on mayors. Not the horses, the elected municipal politicians, you know. Because you don't want to get those two mixed up.
Well, we'll come to that in a minute.
You'd end up with some terrible urban policy making. Like hay bales instead of... I'm going to stop.
This is going to a weird place already. You've been doing some research about the metropolitan mayors.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so for those who don't live on our sceptred isle as it sinks into the sea, this is a very exciting year for English municipal government. Just English, not British, you know, because various major English cities and regions are going to elect their own mayors for the first time. This is probably the biggest shake-up in local government here since the 1970s. And, you know, potentially this could really revolutionise how our cities like Liverpool, Manchester and Birmingham are governed. It's all very exciting if you're a municipal government nerd, which, you know, I am. And so are these people who are listening, probably, I'm guessing.
So it is super exciting because it's...
It is exciting, isn't it? It's really exciting. Woohoo, mayors!
John's got a really crazed look in his eye right now. It's super exciting. It's this big step towards devolution of cities. How many of them are there going to be?
Ah, right. Now, the elections are in May, so they're about 4 months away. So you would think we'd know how many of these guys there are going to be. We don't know. We don't have the faintest idea. I mean, we can guess.
What's the minimum?
I would be... Okay, so... The difficulty we've got is that the British government has been very excited every time it's kind of arranged a deal with the local authorities in the areas, the combined authorities that are going to make up these new kind of mayoral regions. Every time it's closed on those deals, it's put out a press release and there's been, like, you know, a photo op and all that kind of stuff. But then some of those deals have collapsed, like for some reason, like some of the councils involved have pulled out or there's just been local backlash or whatever. And the government doesn't tend to announce that. So there've definitely been more announcements of deals than are actually happening. In fact, deals in some areas have been announced several times with slightly different geographies. The result of all this is it's actually quite unclear how many of them are going to go ahead.
So what you're saying is that in May we are going to elect an as yet unspecified number of exciting new mayoral posts.
What I'm saying is this May we're going to get N new mayors, where N is... I'd be shocked if it's less than three. It'll probably be six or seven. It could be as high as nine, but that's incredibly unlikely. And maybe there'll surprise us. Maybe there'll be a whole bunch they haven't done yet. But, you know, right now, I don't know if people realise this, but the British government has its mind on a few other things over the next few months. So I'm not expecting huge numbers of deals to come out in areas that don't already have them.
Are those three Manchester, Liverpool, Birmingham?
Yeah, I mean, you should be careful with the language you use, because like Manchester's easy, it's Greater Manchester, but like, you know, even in like Wigan, which is quite a long way out, they're probably okay with calling it Manchester. Liverpool is a bit more confusing because it's actually the Liverpool City region, which is the five boroughs that used to be Merseyside, plus which one's the one from Cheshire? Horton, which is like Runcorn, Widnes around there. So the reason you have to be careful there is because there actually already is a mayor of Liverpool, but now there's going to be a mayor of the Liverpool City region, and they're probably both going to be from opposite wings of the same party, so that's going to be fun to watch. But you probably shouldn't say Birmingham, because it's actually the West Midlands Combined Authority, which is a very sexy name. But that's not just Birmingham. That's also Wolverhampton and Coventry, which are two cities about 10 miles away from Birmingham, plus various other boroughs between them. So whoever wins the Manchester race will probably be referred to as the mayor of Manchester, and everyone will kind of be okay with that. But the person who wins the West Midlands race, if you refer to them as the mayor of Birmingham, you're going to get a lot of angry emails from Wolverhampton, is what I'm saying here.
That does sound kind of fun. And
it's not. I've had the angry emails. They're not as fun as you imagine them to be honest.
Are you still getting people from Yorkshire yelling at you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do spend quite a lot of time trolling people from Yorkshire, to be fair. But
these all sound like fairly Labour-leaning areas, is that right?
Yeah, so I mean, the Liverpool City region, they almost might as well not bother holding the election. Like, Steve Rotherham, the Labour candidate, he'd have to die to not win that election. I think that even then, he might still win. Manchester, our old friend Andy Burnham is probably going to win. I think he's got to be the favourite, but as we've talked about many times, if there's any politician in Britain who can lose an easily winnable election, it will be Andy Burnham. So the Tory candidate is the only council leader in the Manchester area who's a Tory, is a guy called Sean Anstey, who leads Trafford, the borough in this quite posh bit of southern Manchester. He's only 29 years old, so good for him. I think he's pretty unlikely to win, but I suppose an independent candidate could come from nowhere and maybe win that one. It's, you know, there are surprisingly high number of independent mayors in previous elections. The one that's actually competitive of the big three is the West Midlands one, because that is genuinely, that could go either way. And also, to be honest, I think the two leading candidates, the Tories have got Andy Street, who was the boss of John Lewis. So he's kind of a business-minded, reasonably centrist Tory, I think. The Labour candidate is a guy called Sean Simon, who's not a household name in the way Andy Burnham is. So, you know, there's a lot of swing seats around there, and I think the government is going to throw everything at winning the West Midlands so that it can say, hey, look, we're beating Labour in the cities now. So those three are definitely going to happen, but there's a lot of others that might or might not.
Okay. Do we know when we'll know?
I mean, I'm assuming we'll know when we get to May, then we'll know. Like, we'll just say, is there an election? Oh, yes, there's an election. I'll run through them very quickly. There's Teesside, which is like Middlesbrough, Hartlepool and so on. They're picking candidates up there. I think everyone expects that one to go ahead. There is the West of England, which is an unhelpfully vague name for Bristol and its kind of commuter belt.
I was going to say, to my mind, the West of England is the bit where the island isn't there. If you go west, that's where there's not island. You have the southwest, but there's no middle west. I didn't do geography for very long. I don't know if that shows.
You should look at them. We do excellent maps on City Metric. You should check them out sometime.
I should read City Metric. Yeah, I've heard it's really good.
Well, you don't. Never. We'll have this conversation afterwards. The West of England is what used to be known as Avon, which is one of those kind of made-up counties that was sort of a metropolitan county, but I'm not sure it ever had the formal status. But it's Bristol, Bath, and a couple of the sort of suburban and rural boroughs between. It lost North Somerset, which was part of Avon, because they flounced out, basically like local Tories not wanting to be part of a sort of Bristol-led area that might elect a Labour mayor. But probably won't. The Tories will probably win that one. But that one we're kind of expecting to go ahead, but who knows? Like, if one's gone, you can't guarantee that the whole thing's going to hold together. There's two more. What are the other two? Oh, Cambridge and Peterborough. Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, which is, that's exactly what it sounds like. That's going to be fairly safe Tory. That's kind of the one area that isn't like a city region that's not definitely, but likely to get a deal. I think they're picking candidates now. I think Heidi Allen has come forward as the Tory candidate. I don't know who else there is. But that one will probably go ahead. And then there's the other big metropolitan areas that aren't getting deals for one reason or another.
I just feel like for an international audience, I should try and sum up these places.
Are you going to give us your kind of stereotypical guide of to England's cities?
I am, and if you want to tweet me to complain, I'm at Stephanie Boland. I won't read it, but you can tweet at me. Teesside, ex-industrial Geordies.
Don't call them Geordies.
Oh, sorry. I'm not sorry. Why can't I call them Geordies?
They're not Geordies. Geordie means Newcastle.
Okay, sorry.
You're not even allowed to call people from Sunderland Geordies. They're Mackhams.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
I don't know what they call them in Middlesbrough.
I don't know. Okay, ex-industrial.
Yeah.
Ex-industrial, that's fine.
It's port cities, ex-industrial, a bit depressed.
West of England, organic farming.
Kind of. Bristol and Bath are actually boom towns because they're kind of close enough to London. There's a lot of research universities there. That's kind of, after London, that's the English city that's by far the richest.
What I mean is either the people are growing organic vegetables or getting them in veg box schemes.
There'll be a lot of hipsters, sort of London overspill, people who kind of moved out but didn't want to kind of leave the city lifestyle altogether.
But Bristol's also quite diverse, am I right in saying that?
Yeah, relatively speaking. So, yeah, Bristol is another one where there actually already is a mayor, so there might be a power struggle. But Bristol elected a Labour mayor called Marvin Rees last year, who's a relatively young British black guy. Who I think comes from a fairly working class background. So yeah, like London, Bristol is a fairly diverse city, but Bath and the other areas around Bristol, not so much. So I think the Tories are probably going to win that one if it goes ahead.
Okay, Cambridge and Peterborough, I have no idea how to sum up with any reference which isn't only comprehensible to an English audience.
Yeah, I mean, Cambridge is university town.
John Lewis, yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah, they're all going to vote Tory.
They are all going to vote Tory.
But the interesting thing about that is it's not just a city deal, it's kind of a county. And there were meant to be more of those. Like, there was meant to be a Greater Lincolnshire deal, there was meant to be an East Anglia one, which would have been Norfolk and Suffolk. And there are other deals that didn't come through for one reason or another. But clearly, at some point, the Tory government was very keen on having more of these mayoral contests that could actually hope to win. The problem with that is you end up with counties who don't really want mayors, because if they're Tories, they probably don't want extra layers of government because they think it's a waste of money. So that didn't really come off.
Right. So the form of the mayoral election already stands against the Tory vote.
Yeah. Should we talk about Yorkshire?
Do we have to?
Yeah.
Go on.
Okay. So Yorkshire, there was meant to be a Sheffield deal. Sheffield, another old industrial town, steel town. And that was actually one of the first announced. In fact, I think after Manchester, it was next announced, because then Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg was a Sheffield MP, and he was very keen to get that through. And it was going to be like Sheffield and a bunch of the other cities around it, like Rotherham and Barnsley, and also some of its commuter zone, which kind of spills over into the neighbouring counties of Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire. And that's just imploded, as best we can tell, partly because it's quite difficult to work out how the funding is going to work. When you're taking money from different counties, and like, you know, Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire were not keen on this because they would lose money. But the bigger thing, I think, is that actually there's a lot of very grumpy people in Yorkshire who don't think you should divide Yorkshire into bits, and who are pushing for, like, you know, a big Yorkshire deal that would be Sheffield and Leeds and all the rural bits as well. So they've been kicking back against this deal. They were the guys who stopped. There was never a Leeds city deal that got anywhere, because basically all the people in kind of the commuter towns of North Yorkshire, which are Tory rural areas, just stymied it before it even began. So the Leeds City region never started, really. So the result of all this is that, you know, we're going to get all these new elected politicians who are, you know, hopefully, it's actually worked pretty well in London, despite the fact I don't think the calibre of our mayors has necessarily been brilliant. But considering that, it's been a pretty successful scheme to have, you know, more just someone to bang the drum for the city, really, to you know, encourage investment and kind of personify the city a little bit. I think it's worked pretty well. And you know, the cities west of the Pennines, like Liverpool and Manchester, are going to get this, and those to the east, like Leeds and Sheffield, aren't, because some people in rural Yorkshire are twats.
Your words, not mine.
Yeah.
So
We're going to get letters again, aren't we? I love getting letters. It's great.
I hope we do. Yeah. I've been watching a great dramatisation of the John Christie murder series, and he's from Yorkshire, so that's my...
Is it always raining?
No, he doesn't live in Yorkshire. He leaves Yorkshire and is a serial killer. Anyway.
So what you're saying is that all people from Yorkshire...
No, I said one person from Yorkshire in a TV series I've been watching is a serial killer. If people want to extrapolate from that, that's on their watch.
I'm just saying, there's no Lancashire Ripper, is there?
No, there really is. Is there?
But they don't call them the Lancashire Ripper.
They don't call him the Lancashire Ripper.
I just think it's the Yorkshire Ripper.
It is the Yorkshire Ripper. What would they call him in Lancashire? Badden. He's a badden. this has gone to a weird place.
Yeah.
I've been researching mayors myself.
Oh, yeah? What exciting things have you found out about mayors?
I've been researching weird mayors. In fact, I googled weird mayors. And it turns out there are mayors who are sillier than Andy Burnham, which isn't what I was expecting to find.
Andy Burnham isn't silly, exactly. Well, like, you need context. I'm not going to talk about Andy Burnham.
Burnham. If you want to hear our thoughts on Andy Burnham, I think we did do a mini podcast about Mr. Burnham.
Also, he is probably going to be mayor of Manchester, so we're going to be able to mock him every week. So.
Oh, it's going to be so good. Apart from the fact he's going to be mayor of Manchester, which is going to be difficult to handle. Anyway, do you want to hear about some weird mayors?
Tell me some weird mayors.
So there was a mayor of Fort Wayne who was actually fairly unexceptional. He didn't have any weird policies. He wasn't like some of the other mayors, you know, non-human. Except that his name was Harry Balls, which apparently caused controversy after they planned to name a civic building after him. So I hope that was a swimming pool.
I mean, do you need a certain pronunciation? You know, Harry Balls.
It's spelled Harry Balls, B-A-A-L-S. I don't know what the accents are like in Fort Wayne. Maybe it sounded more like Harry.
I'm not going to attempt it, but...
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that's where we were going with
where
this.
Where we were going, yeah. In 1967 in Ecuador, apparently, in a town called Picoza, I can't really pronounce Spanish, a foot powder was elected mayor after running on the slogan, vote for any candidate, but if you want well-being and hygiene, vote for Pulverpews. So this is just a brand of foot powder that was elected mayor of a small town in Ecuador.
What were the foot powder's policies?
I don't really know. I guess well-being and hygiene through the medium of buying foot powder.
I'm just kind of interested to know the local tax policies from the foot powder. Like,
well, I read this thing that said that they tried to ban other brands of foot powder, but I can't tell if that was a joke or, like, did they just put a tub in the mayor's seat?
If a foot powder has ever been your mayor, or any hygiene product really, please write in.
In 2008, the mayor of a village in southwest France tried to pass a decree about people dying. So the cemetery became very overcrowded, and he basically said all persons not having a plot in the cemetery and wishing to be buried in this district are forbidden from dying in the parish.
He banned death.
He banned death, which I think is kind of cool.
So, I mean, did that work?
It did not work, and he was really upset that the policy hadn't worked.
Did he come forward with any theories as to why it hadn't worked?
No, he just expressed his sorrow and regret.
So hang on, how is it meant to work? Like, if you're feeling a bit peaky, you have to leave the village.
Get out, just trying to go die somewhere else.
Cross the village boundary and lie down, basically.
Maybe it's like how it works in the Houses of Parliament. So do you know about this? Nobody's allowed to die in the Palace of Westminster. So if you're on your last legs, they will wait. They will kind of send the ambulance to the Palace of Westminster and declare you once you're on Westminster Bridge.
So if they left the corpse within the Palace of Westminster, would you live forever?
I guess you'd have to. I don't know.
You know that North Korea is the only state in the world where the head of state is dead?
Oh, I did not know that.
It's still Kim Il-sung, who's the grandfather of the current leader, is, you know... It's not even like head of state for life, it's head of state for afterlife.
You should ring the Whip's office and ask which of their MPs are actually corpses. But anyway, I found this really interesting that he banned people from dying, and then I went down a kind of rabbit hole of weird laws. So... In Ebola, just south of Naples, kissing in a moving vehicle can carry a fine of up to £415. Now, I want to know when that was instituted and why.
I mean, I can see the point if it includes the driver. I mean, you don't want someone snogging when they're meant to be concentrating on the road ahead. But if it's like, if you're passengers, it's a bit rude, I suppose, if like, you know, there's three of you in the car and two of you are making out in the back seat, you know.
See, that's what I want it to be. I want it to be a really angry third wheel. No pun intended. goes, I'm so sick of you two. Yeah. I'm going to outlaw this.
Do you think the person who passed that law had just been for a bad breakup or something?
No one is allowed to kiss in cars anymore. But it's not as good as in Birmingham, Alabama. Apparently, you can be fined for disorderly conduct for having sex, and I quote, on the steps of any church after the sun goes down. And I love this idea that if you do it in daylight, you know, at least you're sharing the joy. That's fine.
It's, sorry, I just need to correct your pronunciation there. It's actually West Midlands, Alabama.
Yeah, another one that I really love is, since 1984, residents of Sparta, Spades, Indiana, have been banned from shooting open tins and cans with a revolver. And that's another one where I just really want to know what caused that to be banned.
Yeah, you kind of want to know the story, don't you?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do the stories behind these in a future episode, so you know, stay tuned.
Yeah, no, subscribe now to hear why you're not allowed to shoot a tin can in this part of Alabama. But I've also brought along a present for you, John, because the quiz went down so well in last week's episode, which you should go download after this.
Yeah, it's called Christmas Special, but it's not. I mean, it's a bit Christmassy, but it's not like one of those things where, like, it would be really depressing to listen to it in January. You should still listen to it, is what I'm saying.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah.
There's a really cool City Metric quiz, including a line round about burning goats.
That bit was Christmassy, because obviously burning goats is a Christmas-specific tradition. We'll have no burning goats at this time of year. Anyway, what's the present?
Well, I've brought you a January present, and like all things we do in January, it's to do with regulation and stricture and making people's lives more miserable. It is the Transport for London Railway Bylaws.
Bylaws?
Bylaws. Okay. So these are things that under the Greater London Authority Act 1999, you are either compelled or not allowed to do on the tube. And I thought you would enjoy these because I know that you like tubes and also rules.
I am a big. I like to know what the rules are so that I can break them. I don't play by the rules. I move to the beat of my own drum. But God damn it, do I get the job done? I'm just going to stop talking. Yeah, tell me some bylaws.
Well, I'll tell you that the first one under the first section, conduct and behaviour, point one is queuing.
Are they pro or anti?
They are very pro queuing. They're the most stereotypically good English thing you will have ever heard. So you can be forced to queue on the tube, basically. So the operator or an authorised person may require any person to queue in order to regulate order or safety on or near the railway. Any person directed by a notice to queue or asked to queue by an authorised person shall join the rear of the queue and obey the reasonable instructions of any authorised person regulating the queue. I've made the word queue sound weird. I've said it too many times.
What I like about that one is it doesn't say, like, you know, if you want a ticket or to get onto a train or anything. It's just any situation you may be required to queue.
Isn't it beautiful?
Get in that queue.
Isn't it brilliant? Do you want to know some things you're not allowed to take on the underground?
What am I not allowed to take on the underground?
A loaded weapon of any kind, any flammable explosive or corrosive substance, and any item which is or may become dangerous. That's anything.
Is it? I mean, could the tube map ever be dangerous?
You could get a paper cut.
Okay, that is a possibility.
Have you got any good ones? I've given you some of the power there.
Yeah, I've not read them, so I've been trying to find them while we've been doing this. I do like bylaw 10.4, which is no person shall open a train door or enter or leave any train while it is in motion or between stations. So it's technically against the rules to get off the train when it's moving. I think that's a good rule.
I think that's a good rule.
I kind of want to know what the situation was that made them think they needed that rule. But it's, I mean, also, like, if you disobey that rule,
you just die. I mean, that's very self-enforcing.
Yeah, it's like, why do you need a rule? It's like, I mean, how, you're done, right? You're done. Yeah.
When I was a child, the police came around to teach us about train safety, and they showed us a video where they were like, you shouldn't walk between train carriages. You know, some train carriages have got the little doors at the end, or cars, as we must talk. Say when we're talking about the tube, and you can technically walk between them as the train is moving. And they showed us this grotesque thing where they crushed a watermelon between two carriages to represent your head to dissuade you from doing it.
So do not stick your head between two cars when the train is moving.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm okay. Really glad they produced that video.
Yeah.
There's one banning busking, which I actually think is a bit of a shame. You're not allowed to tout for money. You're not allowed to do any unauthorised gambling. You're not allowed to play with the escalators. These guys don't want anyone to have any fun.
No.
Oh, it is actually in the bylaws that people shall keep to the right of escalators when not walking up, down or along them. Okay.
I didn't know that was a bylaw. I thought that was just a convention.
I'm going to laminate this and take it in my pocket, because there is nothing on God's green earth that annoys me more than when people stand in the walking bit of the escalator. I have learnt to say stand on the right in so many languages.
There was a weird moment actually after, like, Christmas. London empties out, just I think, like a lot of big cities, like so many people go home to their families, like elsewhere in Britain or elsewhere in the world even. So there was a period between Christmas and New Year where basically it was only non-Londoners in the West End. It was like tourists, and none of them knew the rules. It was so weird. Everyone's like walking slowly and standing on the wrong side, and suddenly it took like twice as long to get anywhere.
It is a moment at which I realise
we need to take back control, bring down
we
the
do
shutters.
I know, well, this, yeah, is the thing. I apparently do have a real inner fascist, but a fascist who operates only among whether or not you can obey what I consider the rules of moving in cities. I had this actually outside Westminster a few weeks ago. We were changing from a bus to what were we doing around Westminster? Probably some kind of nerdy politics thing. And there were two people walking next to each other very slowly down the steps outside Westminster, one of the biggest tourist attractions in the country, on their phones. And I wanted to shake them and go, do you not realise it is 4 p.m. in central London? What is wrong with you? And that's when I realised I should have voted Brexit.
We'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.